News World Headquarters in New York. This is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. The testing of a new high-thrust rocket engine in North Korea drew strong reaction from President Trump today. On his flight back to Washington from his weekend in Florida, the president said, quote, North Korea is acting very badly. That new test came just as the U.S. Secretary of State was wrapping up a trip to the region in China. Our Matt Bradley is in Seoul, South Korea tonight.
A new engine, fueling a fresh round of North Korean propaganda. An engine test which some say could propel an intercontinental ballistic missile, capable of reaching U.S. soil. Dictator Kim Jong-un promised to get the new weapon operational in this year's New Year's speech. North Korea has put on a provocative display of force, an unprecedented two nuclear tests last year. And it successfully fired four ballistic missiles off its coast just 2 weeks ago. Korea watchers expect a new nuclear test any day. If it happens, North Korea's test results will almost certainly be different. The country now facing off against a new American administration. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson warned that a U.S. preemptive strike is a very real possibility.
Let me be very clear. The policy of strategic patience has ended. We're exploring a new range of diplomatic, security, and economic measures. All options are on the table.
Rising tensions led to an American missile defense system being moved into South Korea this month. So while Washington may want to take a harder line against North Korea, the question is, will its regional partners go along with it? This weekend, China's government urged Tillerson to take a more cautious approach. Following the impeachment of South Korean President Park, elections in May will likely put a liberal president in power who may want to pursue dialogue with the North. But the Trump administration seems determined to confront them.
Right now, four U.S. four-star generals think that North Korea either has the capability to hit the U.S. with a nuclear ICBM, or they have to assume for planning purposes they have that capability.
A frightening new moment, sabers now rattling on both sides of the Pacific. Matt Bradley, NBC News, Seoul.
Beyond tensions over North Korea, this will be a critical week for the Trump administration. Congressional investigations on Russia, questions about wiretapping, hearings for the Supreme Court nominee. And that's all just tomorrow. A report from Kelly O'Donnell.
The long shadow of Vladimir Putin falls on Capitol Hill tomorrow. FBI Director James Comey will be the star witness as the House Intelligence Committee examines Russia's reach into campaign 2016 and President Trump's wiretap allegations. Today, divergent assessments on whether anyone in Trump's circle was linked to Russia's meddling. Republican Chairman Devin Nunes shoots that down.
There's no evidence of collusion.
But the top Democrat, Adam Schiff, disagrees.
At the outset of the investigation, there is circumstantial evidence of collusion. There is direct evidence, I think, of deception.
No proof found to back up President Trump's tweeted charge of surveillance at Trump Tower. But the president's complaints about illegal leaks may have merit. Chairman Nunes says he thinks the public disclosure that revealed calls between former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and the Russian ambassador violated the law.
We know a law has been broken, and we need to get to the bottom of it.
High stakes of a different kind, as the Republican plan to overhaul health care fuels town hall meetings.
It's a better solution than the ACA, sir.
Criticism of the GOP bill threatens to stall a top priority. House Speaker Paul Ryan says Thursday's House vote is time to deliver on years of campaign promises.
When this vote comes up, that's when it will be a binary choice. Either we're for the status quo or we're for repealing and replacing this law.
While the fate of the health care repeal is uncertain, there is no division among conservatives about the president's choice for the Supreme Court. Tomorrow begins the confirmation hearing for Judge Neil Gorsuch, who could become the youngest member on the high court, giving the president's choice long-term impact. Kate?
Big day tomorrow. Kelly O'Donnell, thanks so much. And the Trump administration has taken the first steps toward that border wall. Beyond requesting billions in funding, it's now asking for proposals from contractors interested in building the wall, setting out height requirements, building materials, and other features. You can watch an in-depth report on our Facebook page by going to facebook.com/NBC Nightly News. While security and safety are big priorities in the president's budget proposal, programs that support arts and the humanities are facing deep cuts. The dollars are small for the federal budget, less than 1%, but have a big impact on institutions across the country. We get more on that tonight from NBC's Kristen Dahlgren.
In Waterloo, Iowa, 13-year-old Ahmad Madlock is feeling creative.
Yep, that's a bird.
For many, the youth art team is the only chance to get their hands on art supplies.
It gives people a way to express themselves, like, together, you know.
But the program's future is fuzzy. About a quarter of its funding, around $11,000, comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, now targeted in the president's budget proposal, along with the National Endowment for the Humanities and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a total of $741 million.
I think the message the president sent right now is that we want to defund those, and there's completely defensible reasons for doing that.
On Twitter, the president said his budget puts the country's safety first.
The cost of one F-22 jet fighter is 2.5 times what the entire National Endowment for the Arts budget is.
At the Metropolitan Opera, which receives just $100,000 from the NEA, the show will surely go on. But General Manager Peter Gelb worries about the future for the arts.
You know, obviously we need to protect the country, but we need to protect the arts as well.
The NEA, which provides for everything from theater to the military's Healing Arts Program, points out its funding is in every congressional district. For its part, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting said the cuts would destroy public media's role in early childhood education, public safety, and promoting civil discussions. Ultimately, it is Congress that writes the budget. But this is the first time a president has called for ending endowments created by Lyndon Johnson in 1965. On Capitol Hill, the battle is just getting started.
All right.
Back in Iowa,
this should be an exotic color.
Ahmad is finishing his latest masterpiece.
I think that when we do stuff like this, it opens up doors.
Hoping there will be more to come. Kristen Dahlgren, NBC News, New York.
7 murders across the country are causing great concern in the transgender community. Tonight, 3 happened in Louisiana. That's where NBC's Tammy Leitner begins her report.
The jazz funeral is a New Orleans tradition. Family and friends honor the life of Chyna Gibson.
She did it all. She did it all.
She sang. She loved doing crazy things, dancing.
31-year-old Chyna Gibson was a transgender woman.
I'm still waiting for her to come through the door. And it's just like disbelief.
Chyna is one of 3 transgender women killed in Louisiana over an 8-day stretch. Panic followed.
We're scared. You know, we can't even go nowhere. So it's like we're prisoners in our own home.
Maya Dupree was friends with 2 of the victims.
What is it like being a transgender woman living in the Deep South?
They look at us crazy like we don't exist, like we're not normal people.
That sentiment is making it nearly impossible to investigate these crimes and prompting New Orleans Police Superintendent Michael Harrison to appoint a police liaison to the LGBTQ community. So far, police have not found a connection between these murders.
And we're going to search the ends of the world to find who did this so we can hold them accountable and bring them to justice.
But this is not the only community searching for justice. 7 reported transgender murders in the first 2 months of this year. Louisiana, South Dakota, Ohio, Mississippi, and Illinois.
Trans lives matter!
The deaths raising concerns with civil rights and anti-violence advocates and following a staggering number of transgender murders in 2016.
No more to transphobia!
Statistics show pervasive discrimination and mistreatment against the trans community. Nearly half verbally harassed in the last year. Roughly 1 in 10 physically attacked. And 40% attempted suicide. Alarming numbers that Chyna Gibson's family say are part of the problem.
It doesn't matter what you is. We're going to love you to the end.
We are.
To the end. And this just was her end.
Tammy Leitner, NBC News, New Orleans.
Fire and floods are big concerns tonight in the western part of the country. A lot of homes being threatened by a wildfire near Boulder, Colorado, while the Northwest and California could see more severe flooding. We get the latest from NBC's Steve Patterson.
Tonight, lives threatened in the line of fire near Boulder, Colorado. With more than 60 acres burned, the flames are hopping just above a row of homes with minimal containment. Farther west, wet weather makes for shocking scenes. Subdivisions transformed into residential rivers, streets that look like Venetian canals, and evacuations in parts of Yakima, Washington. In Portland, swept away.
It's not something you expect on your daily commute to work.
Three men survive uninjured after a hillside collapsed onto their car Thursday. The warning now being heard across the region. Conditions are primed for more.
We have had so much rain this entire winter, and when we get rain like that, the earth moves.
This week, there's more rain in the forecast, with a bullseye on Northern California. Some 5 inches expected near the battered Oroville Dam. Crews have been working around the clock to repair the dam's fractured spillway in order to lower Lake Oroville to prepare for more rain.
We've also gone to extreme efforts to basically clean out and caulk every crack that we can find on the deck.
In February, nearly 200,000 residents were evacuated as an auxiliary spillway overtopped. After one of the wettest winters on record, rapid snowmelt this season could mean more flood danger across the West. A new norm for a region that once couldn't get enough rain, now bracing for more. Steve Patterson, NBC News, Los Angeles.
We've heard a lot about President Trump's executive order that would temporarily ban travelers from 6 mostly Muslim countries. Another part of that order would temporarily halt and then reduce the flow of refugees into the United States. Among those pushing back, some small U.S. cities that have come to rely on refugees. NBC's Ron Allen reports from one of them.
Dinner for the Al-Sulebi family. Chicken, yogurt, and bread. They are refugees who fled Syria and have been in the U.S. just 6 months. Their new hometown? Erie, Pennsylvania.
What did you take when you left?
All the clothes.
Only your clothes?
Yeah.
Ali Al-Sulebi says, when people here find out I'm a refugee, they say, welcome. As President Trump seeks a 120-day halt to refugees entering the U.S. and then a significant reduction, Erie, a Rust Belt city with a declining population, rolls out the welcome mat. Up to 700 refugees arriving annually in recent years from around the world now make up as much as 18% of the population.
What has been the net result of refugees coming to this town?
Oh, I think it's kept us alive. I think it kept us moving forward.
Paul Jericho has been helping refugees here for several decades.
They rent a lot of apartments. They buy a lot of things. They pay taxes immediately.
Out in Erie County, an area President Trump won, plastics maker Sterling Technologies started hiring refugees when they couldn't find enough workers to fill their lower-skilled jobs.
We're talking about jobs that pay $8, $9, $10 an hour.
These are at $9. You know, a lot of people want to make the $20 an hour job.
Nearly 25% of the employees are refugees, the business expanding. Erie's changing face, perhaps most obvious, at East High School, where flags mark students' homelands. More than 30 languages are spoken, and the Al-Sulebi children fit right in.
We're a resettlement destination. Over time, we've come to embrace our new American population, especially here at East High.
We could have gone to other cities like Lansing, Michigan, Akron, Ohio, or Sioux Falls, South Dakota, also welcoming refugees for an economic boost. These are legal immigrants. The vetting process takes years, and of course, a lot of uncertainty now with all this, with the fight over the president's executive order in court.
Ron, thank you so much. One of the country's most colorful and prolific newspapermen has died. Jimmy Breslin spent more than half a century chronicling New York as a champion of the city's working class. He was a reporter and columnist for a long list of New York newspapers, winning a Pulitzer Prize. He also wrote almost 24 books. The Daily News called Breslin the biggest, the baddest, the brashest, the best columnist in New York City, and the first to say so, too. Jimmy Breslin was 88 years old. We're back with news tonight for anyone who's ever gotten those annoying robocalls from scammers masquerading as IRS or credit card companies. It doesn't matter if you're on the Do Not Call registry because the scammers are usually operating from overseas. But now federal regulators here are poised to take action to allow phone companies to block those calls. Here's NBC's Tom Costello.
If you've been on the receiving end of one of these calls, you're hardly alone.
The reason of this call is to inform you that IRS is filing lawsuit against you.
The FCC says Americans are getting a staggering 2.4 billion robocalls each month.
Call immediately on our department number.
Hello?
Caitlin Newman gets them at least three times a day.
Today, I got two from Denver, Colorado, and one from Selbyville, Delaware.
Calls from area codes or numbers that she doesn't recognize, but they keep calling.
It always comes in with different numbers, so I can't block any of the numbers. I've tried before, and they still find a new way of targeting my phone.
That's how it works. Federal investigators say the robocalls are often using a technique called spoofing, where their caller ID is faked, and it's almost always part of an elaborate criminal scam trying to convince Americans to hand over Social Security, bank account, and credit card information.
In many cases, they are scammers who are outside of our borders, and so they end up using a fake number that appears to an American to be someone they might know or a U.S. government agency.
Now the FCC wants to cut the line, voting this week to allow America's phone companies to block any invalid area code or phone number that is most likely a scammer. Why aren't phone companies already blocking those numbers? Because the FCC has always encouraged them to complete all calls. But Americans are now losing millions of dollars to phone scammers.
We found in one case that nine Indian call centers were raking in approximately $250,000 a day from these scams. Just that one operation in a few call centers was really lucrative.
Creepy part of it is, why did they keep calling? How did they get my number? Where did they get it from in the first place?
Creepy and annoying. But the nation's phone companies may soon get the go-ahead to start robo-blocking the robo-calls. Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
What goes up must come down. The SpaceX Dragon successfully returned to Earth today after a month-long mission in space. The cargo craft splashed down in the Pacific Ocean about 200 miles southwest of Long Beach, California. It was loaded with more than 5,000 pounds of science samples and supplies from the International Space Station. Every parent knows how tough it can be at times to keep the kids in bed after bedtime. Here in New York, it was double trouble for the Balkan family as two-year-old twins, Andrew and Ryan, decided to have a party, escaping their cribs, making piles out of their pillows. Their adventures captured on home monitoring video and later sped up by their parents. At one point, the dad puts the twins back in bed, but it's futile. Later, both parents try once more to put the boys to sleep, but the brothers escape again. Eventually, they go to bed all on their own. The tiny party animals, truly two of a kind. So cute. Finally tonight, generations have grown up with it. The classic children's story, The Giving Tree. Inspiring, kind of sad, but ultimately uplifting. Katie Beck tonight with a sequel in California.
In Oakland, California, a love for trees has deep roots. The city's emblem, a sprawling oak tree on every street sign. So it's fitting that here, not where the sidewalk ends, but where it buckles, one particular tree,
isn't that nice?
Is growing a fan club.
You've probably never seen this kind of attention over any tree you've taken down.
We haven't, and that's where we're kind of stumped.
Yeah.
Arborist Joseph Silva and Cole Martinson took down the tree's rotting trunk and broken branches, a threat to the Geronimo family's home.
The roots got too big.
The Geronimo's now giving literary life to what's left behind, asking arborists for a carved seat, an image gone viral, borrowed from Shel Silverstein's children's book, The Giving Tree.
And I love doing anything that's neat for the community and brings the community together.
Its final passage inscribed in black Sharpie.
I don't need very much now, said the boy.
A story about a tree that gave all it had to a little boy.
Just a quiet place to sit and rest.
Drawing people in, stirring childhood memories, finding modern messages.
You need to appreciate everyone in your life and everything that's good in your life you should be very grateful for.
I am very tired. Well, said the tree, straightening herself up as much as she could.
New generations hearing the story for the first time.
I love when people can tie the meaningful stories of our lives into something in the real world.
Well, an old stump is a good place to sitting and resting.
The Geronimo kids have a front row seat to the attraction.
I'm surprised and kind of grateful how so many people are noticing this.
Old roots giving new reason to stop and think a while.
Sit down and rest.
And the boy did.
Katie Beck, NBC News, Oakland.
Truly a giving tree. That is NBC Nightly News for this Sunday night. Lester Holt will be in tomorrow. I'm Kate Snow reporting from New York, and I'll see you tomorrow on MSNBC. For all of us here at NBC News, have a great night.